to a new episode or show of Nerd Nerd Nerdy with DJ Titania here at radio.dominican.edu all Mondays at 9 p.m. Okay, we have a very nice show for you today, prepared with all things Japanese. I don't know what got into me today when I was preparing the show for you, but first we have the Quibbler, our section for news, and we have the new, the old, and the ugly of Japanese RPGs. And then we have the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, not to the galaxy, but to the world of Studio Ghibli. And for those of you who don't know what Studio Ghibli is, stay tuned for the last segment of the show. And for those of you who did not know what that song was, it was the opening for Persona 4. And actually, I really like all the songs from Persona. We're going to talk a little bit about Persona in the second segment today in the show. And the composer for these songs is called Shoji Meguro, and he's so good. I can't even describe it. If you are not into JRPGs, just download the music, because all the music from the Persona series is amazing. Okay, moving along, because we're going to talk about Persona, the Persona series today. I have a little bit of news here with the Quibbler segment of the show. And I'm going to talk about first about how Vikings was renewed for season 4. Not only 5 episodes into season 3, the history's period drama was picked up for a 4th season. The Deadline reports that production on season 4 will begin this spring. That means, like, today. I don't know when, but really soon in Ireland. Vikings is very successful. I mean, I do not watch the show, but I know that I have a lot of friends that are fans of the show, and it's currently averaging 4.3 million total viewers and 2.2 million adults out of them. So that's quite an impressive amount of people that have watched this show. And it's actually ranked number 1 for cable on Thursday nights. So that's quite interesting. The second piece of news for you today is that Sony Entertainment TV is remaking Game of Thrones for Indian television. What the hell? What the hell, guys? If you have heard about this news today, I mean, what is it? What? I mean, if you have seen the pictures of the actors, they're incredibly Indian. I mean, and I don't mean this in any kind of weird racist way. I'm sorry if it comes off that way, but I don't get why they had to take a work of literature such as A Song of Ice and Fire and Game of Thrones and just completely redo it and just bend it so that it fits a certain culture. I mean, they can't just write things that fit for the culture. Game of Thrones is actually pretty universal. I understand that in its themes, they can reach out for a lot of different cultures. And actually, what they're going to focus on is the conflict of Daenerys, of the Mother of Dragons, of Khaleesi, as you may know her, and not on the other characters. I think they're going to portray a little bit of the feud between the Starks and the Lannisters, but not much apart from that, because the show that's going to be named Rani Mahal will be set in India in 1957. That is the year of the Indian Rebellion. And this would suggest that not many fantasy elements will be involved. Also, you should know that Rani Mahal is the name of a royal palace in the city of Yanshi that was damaged by the British bombardment during the 1957 rebellion. So, actually, it's taking on the political side of Game of Thrones. That is what makes Game of Thrones interesting and what sets it aside from its fantasy counterparts. But Game of Thrones is fantasy. A fantasy in the sense of
Lord of the Rings, of a Salvatore, not fantasy in the sense of fiction. And I don't know how much I am for this remake. I mean, the Indian television and film industry is so big that I mean they need new material every day, and it's okay. I mean, they can take Game of Thrones as much as it hurts me, but they can have it if they don't. I mean, what hurts me the most, and I think what will hurt the fans the most, is that they're using the name. Why would they use the name? The themes, as I said, are so universal that they don't need to use the name for that. They don't need to use to base, between inverted commas, their series on Game of Thrones. They could just write something that is loosely based on that. I mean, that's what I think, at least. Our third piece of news today is that UK head teachers will be able to report children playing violent games. The head teachers in Cheshire have warned parents that they will report them to the police if they allow their children to play games rated over 18. This was reported by the BBC from 16 different schools in the country, and they received the letter from the Nantwich Educational Partnership, and they are referring to games like GTA, Call of Duty, and they are singled out for focus, these kinds of games, because in some cases, parents could be found guilty of neglect. The letter said that several children have reported playing or watching adults play games, these kinds of games, which are inappropriate for their age, and they have described the levels of violence and sexual content they have witnessed. Call of Duty, GTA, Dogs of War, and other similar games are all inappropriate for children, and they should not have access to them. If your child is allowed to have inappropriate access to any game or associated product that is designated 18+, we are advised to contact the police and children's social care, and it is neglectful. So, I mean, they said that these kinds of games could lead to early sexualized behaviors, and they advised against letting children use Facebook or WhatsApp, as it could expose them to exploitation. In the UK, the two highest ratings are mature and adults only, that are 17 and 18 respectively, and they are set by the Pan-European Game Information, that is the PEGI. And it is illegal for retailers to sell 12, 16, 18 rated games to children that are below these ages, but it is not illegal for them to play with them or to see other people play with them. I don't know. I mean, there is a fine line between what would be considered neglect. The fact is that I don't agree with the rating. I think that the times are going faster and children are exposed to media that is as sexualized as these video games. And although the video game puts you in the position of the doer, let's say, of the person that takes action, I don't think that video games are the cause of violence in life in general, as many older people could or want to portray reality as such. I mean, it is not, the problem is not as easy. I mean, the problem comes from home and their upbringing. It's not, and the upbringing does not consist of the video game only. I mean, I was exposed to violence in my life in general, and I did not turn out a violent person. And I can say that for all of my friends, too. That depends on your personality and of who you are. No, not on just a video game you play or not. Because if you want to be exposed I mean, if a teenager wants to be exposed to these kinds of things, they will be exposed to these kinds of things, and there's nothing the parent can do about it. And it's time that they, the people, admit that this is true in some way. Although they want to control, like, some kind of beast, what their children do. Except that a borderline case, I mean, do not take those into account. But if you're a normal kid, then just, I mean, let them be. Please, people. The fourth piece of information that I have for you today is that Dragon Age Inquisition DLC Jaws of Hakon will be coming to PS4, PS3, and Xbox 360 after the time exclusive for Xbox One at PC that was released this DLC last week. I mean, we don't know when it will be released for these new consoles and the last generation consoles, but it will be released. And this is very important because exclusives are dying, guys. Consoles are dying. Please let them die so that we all can have PCs and be happy, and we all can have the same console style PC that allows us all to connect in the same time to the same types of servers. I just hate these kinds of things. Okay. I hate people that say, oh, PS4 is the best. Oh, Xbox One is the best. Oh, nobody says that Wii U is the best, but you get my drift. There's no point in choosing a side. Just pick what you want. And if you want to play a game that is somewhere that you cannot get, it's only a marketing strategy, and I absolutely hate that. It's only something to get your money out of your pocket, because if you already have a system that can run that game, why do you have to get another system that can do the exact same thing? They're absolutely the same. They are computers in the end. Okay. Game of Thrones. We have several news for Game of Thrones. Several pieces of news for Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones had a premiere of the fifth season last week and will be going to HBO Live, I mean, live on TV, the 12th of April. Also, and this makes me really happy, Maisie Williams, that many of you may know as Arya Stark, will be guest starring on Doctor Who. And this is something that absolutely makes me so excited, because she is such an amazing young actress, and I want her to grow so much. Just wish her the best. And in Doctor Who, she already is a fan favorite, and if she goes on the road towards Doctor Who and these kinds of things, she will get even more fans. So that's pretty amazing. The next piece of news I have for you is that it may not be news for some of you. Xbox One consumes 250 million worth of energy a year. That's a lot, isn't it? That's a lot. When I read this news, I was pretty shocked. And this can be changed, and it's a pretty big change, only with a programming setting. What happens is that the Xbox One is always on the lookout for you to say Xbox One blah blah, open Xbox One something. I really don't own an Xbox, and I have never owned an Xbox, and I don't want an Xbox. But those of you who have an Xbox may know that if you talk to the Xbox will react, especially the Xbox One that has a Kinect built into it. So the NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council, tried to make Microsoft change the console, change the programming on the console, so because it is an easy fix. But Microsoft refuses to solve the problem. This is not surprising at all. In 2014, an NRDC study looked at the energy consumption of the PS4, Xbox One, and the Wii U, finding out that these three gaming systems might consume as much as 10 billion to 11 billion kilowatt hours annually in the United States alone. Guys, we game a lot. I'm not going to say stop, but if we can make it at least a little bit more efficient, that would help the planet. And I mean, it's pretty, this planet is pretty awesome. So I want to keep on living on this planet, and I want to keep on living nice and comfortable. So yeah. Sony fixed a major problem in their latest console, the PS4, because they switches off the USB ports once the controllers are fully charged. But Microsoft hasn't fixed the biggest energy sucking source of the Xbox One. So yeah. Some progress is being made, but that isn't enough, because they changed the instant on, that's what the feature is called, from 18 watts to 12.5 watts. But this mode is a standard default right out of the box, and it doesn't give the users the option to disable it during initial setup. But there is an option to do so. So you can navigate to activate the energy saving mode. You can go to home screen, press the menu button on the controller, select settings, then power and startup, and select the energy saving power mode. This will give you the ability to put the console on energy saving mode, and this will actually help a lot. Do you remember that I said a few shows ago that Hugh Jackman wanted to play Wolverine for the rest of his life? Well, if you follow him on Instagram, he posted a picture of him with his hands with Wolverine's claws and saying, "Wolverine, one last time." If he's trying to be cryptic, I don't get his point. I mean, he can just decide if he wants to play Wolverine or not, but stop teasing us, because the filming for the movie, for the standalone Wolverine movie, is not going to be until next year, and he's not scheduled to appear in X-Men Apocalypse, that the filming starts in April. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Moving along, you must watch Marvel's Daredevil that will appear April 10th on Netflix. All 13 episodes will go online simultaneously, as Netflix does. And I have a pretty big... I have some high hopes for this, because after the Ben Affleck, the film in 2003 for Daredevil, that was pretty much awful. But Netflix has done some pretty good stuff, so I have some hopes for that. Then we also have an April 18th Orphan Black. I will remind you of that, but that's a pretty good show if you want to take a look at it. We also have to remember that The Legend of Zelda for Wii U was pushed back to 2016 because supposedly the game had so many possibilities and they wanted to create the game to its fullest potential. And I mean, I appreciated that they released a video of the producer, Eiji Aonuma, saying that this was going to happen, and so they weren't making the release in 2015 their priority. But never mind, I guess. That's nice, but not so nice. Then we have Mulan, that will be giving a live-action treatment, as this is the next princess that's given the live-action treatment. We also have The Jungle Book, Beauty and the Beast, as I said a few shows ago, and Alice in Wonderland, that has been scheduled a sequel, and Tim Burton's Dumbo. Watch out for that. We also have out this week the first DLC for The Sims 4, the first expansion pack that cost $40. What? It's released tomorrow for PC and Mac, and It's called Get to Work, so it basically gives you four more different careers for the Sims to be able to choose. And then we have Neverwinter, that is the MMO that is based on D&D. The MMO, the Massive Multiplayer Online, that is based on Dungeons & Dragons, just for those of you who are not familiar with the acronyms. And it will be released tomorrow for the Xbox One, for those of you who are interested in that. Also, we have an expansion pack for Hearthstone, and that's pretty interesting too. I mean, I don't play Hearthstone. The adventure packs give gamers a new single player gameplay experience, and that's pretty cool. I mean, if you play Hearthstone, that is basically a magic card game, but it's online. I'm not into it. If you like it, then go for it. Next, we're going to a little break. I'm gonna leave you with a song that I know that you're going to enjoy. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the new, the old, and the ugly of Japanese RPGs. I hope you enjoy the song, and see you in the next segment. You're listening to Radio Dominican.edu. This is DJ Titania in Nerd or Nerdy.
Everybody, put your hands up, so fire, go, 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 so
Welcome back to Nerd Nerd Nerdy, where we explore your nerd side for an hour each Monday at 9 p.m. here at radio.dominican.edu. I am DJ Titania, and in this segment we're going to talk about the new, the old, and the ugly of Japanese RPGs. I think you know what RPGs are, right? If you don't know, RPG is an acronym that stands for role-playing game. So basically what you do is you have a character that has some stats, some statistics, some things that they're good at, things that they're not, and they basically gain levels, and that's how you advance through the game. The mechanics are pretty simple, and most games nowadays have some RPG kind of thing going on in them. And what happens is that Japanese RPGs are different from Western RPGs. There's a history in Japanese RPGs, from Final Fantasy, from different kinds of RPGs, that goes on from the 80s, that have certain specific characteristics that stand them apart from Western RPGs. If we take a look at Western RPGs that are purely RPGs, I mean, we cannot find a pure RPG and that has nothing else. I mean, we may talk about Baldur's Gate. We may talk about Pillars of Eternity that was released last week. But apart from that, you have some things like Skyrim, like Fallout, some things like Mass Effect, Dragon Age. Those kinds of games are traditional Western RPGs, but they also include some kind of other type of game. For example, Mass Effect is a third-person shooter, but Dragon Age is a more tactical kind of game, more medieval fighting style game that is a spiritual successor of Baldur's Gate, but it's not quite. And Baldur's Gate and Pillars of Eternity are more strongly based on things like Dungeons and Dragons. But Japanese RPGs always have a turn-based system. What is a turn-based system? If you take a look at what I mentioned before, if you take out, for example, Dragon Age, that you can pause the battlefield at any time. If you take a look at, for example, The Witcher, if you take a look at Mass Effect again, if you take a look at Borderlands, if you take a look at all this Fallout, all these games are live combat. I mean, you cannot pause the game, or if you pause it, there's nothing you can do during the pause. So the point of the game is that you fight while the things are moving around you. So it's based on your skill as well as the skills of the character. But in Japanese RPGs, your characters have a set of skills, and as you level them up, you rely on how your characters level up and how you conform the party of characters that you bring with you to the adventure.
and the battles that go on in Japanese RPGs usually take place in turns. So you have one turn that's for one of your characters, the other turns for the other one of the characters, so on, then for the monster, for the enemy, then again for your characters, and that's how it goes. If you take, for example, what goes on with Final Fantasy, you have different characters that have different speeds, so you have a timeline, and the timeline, the different characters move at different speeds throughout the timelines, and if they are casting a spell, or if they are hitting something with a sword, or if they're arching, they will move at different speeds in that timeline until they can perform the action. So that's something that's not unique to JRPGs. So, because if you take, for example, Child of Light, that is a Western RPG, I mean, it's not a hard RPG. It's not something that... it's different because although you have a turn-based system and you have this timeline and you don't have, for example, other characteristics that I'm going to talk about that make a Japanese RPG, because Child of Light is an indie game, kind of artsy type of game, and has nothing to do with it. Also, what the turn-based system makes you do is that you cannot, you don't rely on your skill. I mean, you can, it's only a game of, it's almost like playing chess, but with different chips. So you must outwit what happens like in the machine. You must outwit the machine, the AI. But actually what's going on is that if you have a set of abilities and the enemy has a set of abilities, and if you do not have the specific ingredients, let's say, in your party or in your backpack to aid you will not be able to go through with the fight. So you need to, it's basically a strategy game on top of being an RPG, or a Japanese RPG is basically a strategy game. That's what I'm trying to say. So what happens with this turn-based system is that you're collecting experience points, but you need to grind these experience points. You need to go throughout the map that's usually big and arduous and lengthy, and you need to look for monsters that usually pop out of nowhere, and you grind the experience points. So you level up by fighting enemies that are beneath your level until you get to enemies that are hard enough for you to fight again, and then you stay in that area and you fight and you fight and you fight, and that's actually a very lengthy process and very boresome for a lot of people. But if you're in the mood, you can do it. What I've just said sounds very boring, because also what happens with Japanese RPGs is that they're very, very long. They are 80 hours long, generally, or more. They do not go below 60 hours long. And that's of you sitting there playing the game. Can you imagine that? Yes, because you probably played one. And I have played several. So what happens is that you are compelled to play the game because you fall in love with the characters. You fall in love with the story. You fall in love with the visuals. You fall in love with the music. And all of that makes you want to play the game so bad that all of those flaws, because generally there are design flaws, their Japanese RPGs are intrinsically flawed in my respect. They make you play the game because of that, because the games are so beautiful and so amazing. And although they have flaws, they also have a lot of things that are very good for them, because this narratives, these characters, these visuals, this music compels you to play it. They make you play it, and you get to the point in the story where you have this fight. You prepare yourself for this fight, and also you play because of the challenges and you play because it's fun in general. I know a lot of people also that enjoy the grinding, enjoy just getting there and getting all the experience points. And although it is monotonous, they enjoy it. Because I know there's a lot of people also that enjoy MMOs, and that's monotonous for me. So I'm not the person that enjoys that kind of thing. But people enjoy it. There are people that enjoy it. Okay. Moving along to the new, because that was a lengthy explanation. The new is I have for you is the Persona Saga. And this is a saga that is very close to my heart. This is a part of the Megami Tensei series that is published by Atlus. And actually, the Megami Tensei series compiles a lot of games. Not only the Megami Tensei, but also the demon things, blah, blah. There are a lot of games in the series. And the Persona games are a spin-off of that. But they all have a thing in common, that they have demons, and they have a mythology. The mythology of Japan is going on in them. And they are prominent. Different parts of it is prominent in each of these installments. They usually give players the chance to recruit these demons into the battle party. But this is not the chance of Persona. Persona is a series that centers on a group of teenagers who have the ability to summon facets of their psyche that are known as personas, that are kind of the demons that appear in other Megami Tensei games. They summon these personas to fight the shadows, as they know these enemies, let's say. And this was the first game of the Persona series was released in PlayStation, and it was the name translates that it's called Megami Ibunroku. It translates to Record of the Goddess's Strange Tales. Isn't that a cool name? It's a cool name. And it has the side story, or it's a side story of an alternate universe to the Megami Tensei series. But it was released in North America, here in the States, in 1996 as Revelations Persona. And you have Persona 2, Innocent Sin, and Persona 2, Eternal Punishment. So the second installment of the Persona series is divided in two that were released in 1999 and 2000, also for the PlayStation. Both of these games they haven't aged well. I mean, if you play them now, they're very tedious to play, let's say, in comparison to what Persona 3 and Persona 4 are. Eternal Punishment and Innocent Sin had a PSP remake, and you can play them there if you have one. Persona 3 was released in 2006 for the PlayStation 2 and changed the series completely, because it introduced elements that of simulation games, and the player has the control of high school students that attend classes during the day, so it has all of these social elements as well as battle elements that make this mixture a good one, let's say. So Persona 3 is also known for the use of evokers that are gun-like objects that make the personas of the characters come out. Also, Persona 4 was released in 2008 for the PlayStation 2 and for the Vita in 2012. It expanded on the combat. It's actually much more fun to play Persona 3. If you go from Persona 4 to Persona 3, Persona 3 is a pain to play. But if you go from Persona 3 to Persona 4, it's actually a breeze. It's very, very good. And it expanded on the combat and the simulation elements of Persona 3. But it did not include the evokers. That is something that I miss, actually. Persona 5 is planned for this year for PlayStation 3 and 4, and I'm so, so excited for that. Persona has a very large fandom, and it's also had a lot of spin-offs. Persona 3 Fest, it had an alternate ending. It was released in 2007 for PlayStation 2. You also have Persona 4 Arena and Arena Ultimax that are arcades. We have a lot of handheld games and adaptations for Persona. Persona 3 and Persona 2 Innocent Sin Eternal Punishments, as I said, for PSP. Persona 4 Golden for PS Vita and Persona 4 Dancing All Night for PS Vita 2. Also, we have Shadows of the Labyrinth, that is a 3DS game that is actually a whole new game. It's actually pretty good. I liked it a lot. We also have animes. That we have an anime for Persona 3 that it's called Persona Trinity Soul. And we have Persona 4, the animation, and Persona 4, the golden animation, and 4 films also. So that's a lot of content for the Persona saga. For the old recommendation, I have Chrono Trigger. I mean, Chrono Trigger is one of the best games of all time. If you ask people that have been playing games a lot, they can tell you that Chrono Trigger is one of the best games of all time. It is a JRPG that was developed and published by Square Enix. At the time, it was Square only. And it was released for SNES, for Super Nintendo, in 1995. So it has quite a lot of time in the market. And it has these pixel graphics that are now a pain. But you can play it now on Android or iOS. Chrono Trigger was very, revolutionary for the time, because it included a lot of different alternate endings, multiple endings, plot-related side quests focusing on character development. That's something that all games have now. Unique battle system, detailed graphics. Also, the gameplay deviates from that of traditional RPGs because rather than random encounters, many enemies are openly visible on field maps or lie and wait to ambush the party. And that's something that now happens a lot. Persona 3 and 4 have it. So there you go. Chrono Trigger has time travel involved. It's so good. Guys, if you haven't played it, go into it right now. It's very famous because it was developed by what was called the Dream Team, that included 3 designers that Square dubbed as the Dream Team, of course. They were called Hironobu Sakaguchi, that was the creator of Square's Final Fantasy series, Yuji Horii, a freelancer designer and creator of the Dragon Quest series, another very, very famous game, Akira Toriyama, a freelancer manga artist that is famous for what? Dragon Quest again, and Dragon Ball, guys. Dragon Ball, if you don't know their names, you're not a nerd, I am guessing. So, the ugly. What's the ugly for me? Many people are going to disagree, but Final Fantasy X, guys. I did not like it. I mean, this is a personal experience for me, because when I was grinding in Final Fantasy X, I just couldn't get there, you know? And I was totally into the game, and then suddenly I got into this area that I couldn't get out of, and just, I was underleveled. What is underleveled? I didn't have the sufficient level to be in the area, but I couldn't go back. So, yeah. That wasn't good. But in the end, it comes to what you can connect with or not. There are really bad RPGs and JRPGs out there, but the time and effort that it takes to play an RPG, I mean, when you really come to think of it, it's preferable to drop it just as is, when you realize you don't like it. But many people just keep on playing until it's too late. I mean, they played all the game and then they go out in forums and just say, hey, but this game is so bad, I don't like it. But they cannot be complaining. We're going to go on a little break right now.
and we're going to come back to talk about The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy to Studio Ghibli. Why are people saying to the galaxy? It's such a reflex. The Hitchhiker's Guide to Studio Ghibli. You're listening now to the opening for Persona 3. This is actually my favorite song of the games. So I'm going to leave you for you to listen to it. This is radio.dominican.edu. I am DJ Titania. And this is Lunar Nerdy. Welcome back to Nerd Nerd Nerdy, where we explore your nerd side for an hour a week, every Monday at 9 p.m. This is DJ Titania, and you're listening to radio.dominican.edu. On this last segment of the show, we're running a little bit late tonight. We're talking about The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? No, to Studio Ghibli. I mean, who hasn't watched any of Hayao Miyazaki's movies? He was the main writer, producer, kind of the spirit of Studio Ghibli. And actually, he retired from the studio last year, so we were all pretty bummed about it. I was pretty bummed about it. Every nerd was pretty bummed about it. If you weren't pretty bummed about it, I am disappointed at you, son. So, Studio Ghibli was conceived in 1985, after Hayao Miyazaki and Isao Takahata, and the producer Toshio Suzuki had a success with the 1984 film Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind. They had created this movie for Top Craft, and they decided that they were going to start a new studio, and this was actually the best decision they could have made.
because Studio Ghibli has won so many awards, and it has been since that time one of like the studio that has represented anime throughout the world, and that anime is not only shows for little boys like shonen or shoujo, that are like shows for little boys, shows for little girls, but it can also be talking about very broad themes, very important themes for everyone, and that can reach out for large audiences, like very much like Disney. I mean, Disney is the one that is the company that distributes Studio Ghibli outside and even inside of Japan, so that it actually makes sense. But it is Studio Ghibli is the face of Japan in regards of anime films, animated films. So, and it's a pretty good face if you ask me. I mean, it's astounding what Hayao Miyazaki, his legacy is amazing. If you take a look at Nausicaa, for example, I mean, he's just talking about environment and how you need not take care of environment. But no, that came out wrong. You need to take care of the environment, because Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, of course, she's a little princess, and it's a very beautiful movie. I'm just making fun of it. I don't know why, but you should watch it. It's old. It hasn't aged well, but you should watch it. It's because it's very good. And what happened is that they are very strict about not editing their movies. And that happened because Nausicaa was edited a lot here in the States. And because of the release as Warriors of the Wind, you may know it by that name. And there's a pretty funny anecdote, because after having, like, they wanted to cut another movie that's called Princess Mononoke, and the studio producer, it is rumored that he sent a katana, a Japanese sword, with the message "no cuts" to those involved. So that's pretty amazing, if you ask me. We are talking about 20 years of history, 20 years of movies here, and I'm going to highlight a few of them. I have watched quite a few. There's a lot that I want to watch, but I have watched quite a few, and there's one of my favorite movies is between these. So, just taking that into account, let's start with the saddest movie I've ever seen. And if I say that, if I ask you what is the saddest movie you ever saw, you may not have a straight up answer, because it's just such a strange question, right? But if you ask me, I do have an answer, and it's Grave of the Fireflies. That movie made me cry so hard. I had to get up, cry on my boyfriend's shoulder, and I couldn't stop for a straight half an hour. I cannot remember, but I was sobbing, and I was sobbing so hard. This is not funny. This is totally real. Grave of the Fireflies breaks your heart. You must be physically prepared for that movie. Not only emotionally prepared, but physically prepared. It is a movie about what was left of Japan socially and economically after World War II and during the war. And although it may seem as an anti-war film, the director, that is Isao Takahata, not Hayao Miyazaki in this case, has repeatedly said that it is not an anti-war film, and that it is based on, it's based to create sympathy in the people that are in their early 20s. You should watch the movie when you're in a really good place, or you're in a really, really bad place and you just want to cry and you just want an outlet. Okay, this movie was released in 1988, along with My Neighbor Totoro. And this is one of my favorite movies. My Neighbor Totoro just brings me happiness when there is none. I mean, if you don't know the Totoro, 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 that's just happiness in a song. And it just, one thing you must know about all of Studio Ghibli's movies is that they involved typical Japanese cultural things such as spirits and demons, and that would seem fantasy for us. I mean, they are fantasy, but they are culturally different from our fantasy. We take into account fantasy as dragons and mythological beings and Harry Potter and magic. And Studio Ghibli takes fantasy into account as the spiritual and the journey to becoming a full human being, a full grown-up. And that's something that not only Miyazaki, but his co-workers touch upon many, many times. It is very, very beautiful. And we see a lot of children in these movies that are mesmerized by the spiritual world and how they can see and they can feel all of these spiritual connections with nature and with their imagination that adults just cannot. And that's something that My Neighbor Totoro can teach us, because if you watch it, with the lenses of an adult, it's just two kids that are sad and they're inventing stories, but to forget about their problems, I mean. But if you watch it with the eyes of a child, it's a very magical story about how you have Totoro as a neighbor. Then you have movies such as Kiki's Delivery Service or Porco Rosso that are very beautiful, but they're lesser movies in my respect. And then we go to another one of the greater movies that it's Princess Mononoke. And this is a movie that, such as Nausicaa in the Valley of the Wind, talks about the environment. And many, many adults would discard this movie because it is an animated movie, and they would say, oh no, I would never watch that. That's for little kids. But Princess Mononoke, she's not joking. And I actually, when I was preparing the show for today, I saw a very close resemblance with Maleficent, that's how you pronounce it, Maleficent. And I remembered Princess Mononoke in that moment when I was watching Maleficent, because Princess Mononoke was this girl that was raised by the forest, and she's trying to protect the spirit of the forest from these evil human beings that are trying to destroy it. Also, there's a very good point in Studio Ghibli that there are a lot of very strong female characters, or female characters that are in the center of attention, and although they may not seem strong at the beginning, they find their strength and they find themselves throughout the movie. Then we come to one of my top five favorite movies of all time, that is Spirited Away. And this movie is kind of the Japanese take on Alice in Wonderland, but it's more of a grown-up tale of Alice in Wonderland, because as with many Japanese entertainment, you get a more mature side of things. Things are much more grotesque things are much more exaggerated, and that's one of the beauties of the movie, because everything, all this, the spirit world that is actually the main setting of the movie, is filled with colors and filled with these exaggerations of everyday human life that may teach us a lesson. And that's something that I take from Spirited Away, from Chihiro's journey. Then we have movies like Howl's Moving Castle and Ponyo. And these are funny movies, movies that are light, movies that are nice and airy. And I like them because of that. Like something like Kiki's Delivery Service or Porco Rosso. And then we have Tales from Earthsea. And this is where Miyazaki's son went downhill. Why? Why on earth? Why does that movie exist? Let's just ignore it. Let's ignore it. Because it's based on one of my favorite sagas, one of my favorite books of all time. Ursula K. Le Guin has written one of my favorite sagas of all time, that is Earthsea, and this guy just destroyed it. Okay? It's horrible. Let's just not talk about it. And the last of Hayao Miyazaki's movies was The Wind Rises. That was released in 2013. And it's a very beautiful movie. I mean, if you haven't watched it, I encourage you to do so. I encourage you to watch every movie from Studio Ghibli you can. The last movie that was released by Studio Ghibli was last year, and is When Marnie Was There. But the last one I watched was The Tale of Princess Kaguya, and it's a really nice movie. It's a really beautiful one. I mean, they're all really nice, but if I had to pick, my favorite is Spirited Away. Spirited Away just takes my heart. And my second favorite is My Neighbor Totoro, because Totoro takes your heart away. I'm going to leave you now with a song that I hope you like a lot. And this has been Nerd Nerd Nerdy. This is DJ Titania. We will meet again Monday, 9 p.m. here at radio.dominican.edu with more nerd things for your soul, nerd things that you can dwell upon. Because your nerd side is there, guys. Don't deny it. So until next week, have a good night.
もう一度君に会えると信じ一人迷う雨の夜待ち続けて忘れないよ駆け抜けた過ごしていた今はただ大切に忍ぶよ I will embrace the feeling 君はね確かにあの時私のそばにいたいつだっていつだっていつだってすぐ横で笑っていたなくしても取り戻す君を I will neverI'm not afraid to die.